I'm David Wohl, senior editor at Valiant, and you're listening to Spoiler Country.
Hey, hey, people of Earth, it's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts, John and Kenrick. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on Spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
They're making a new Superman movie.
Yeah, they are.
Right?
I heard they're working on one, yeah.
Yeah, and I heard I don't want to butcher the lady's name that's going to direct it. Or is it a lady?
I have no idea.
But maybe she's writing it.
I haven't looked into it.
Something Coates?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know?
Oh,
starts with a T.
Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yeah. I heard that she's very much involved in the movie.
Yeah, which is good. Good. Yeah, it's being produced by J.J. Abrams, apparently, too.
Are they going to do the Black Superman?
That's what I've heard. And if they go with a Black Clark Kent, that's fine. I don't care.
Can they do that?
I hope they – can they do that? Yeah, they can do that.
They can do it, but I don't want to say should they do that because it doesn't matter. But if they do it, are we going to see like a huge backlash and people are going to be like on
Twitter? Yes.
Like the Twitterverse is going to explode.
The Twitterverse will explode if they do a Black Clark Kent. But let them. I don't care. But I would love to see them do one of the – because there are established Supermen in alternate universes who are black. And it'd be fun for them to travel to do that, to take some establishment that's already there and tap into that lore and show us a different kind of Superman. Not just in the fact that he's not white, but that he's – from a different, you know, not only a different world like Krypton, but a different Earth. And one of them is, you know, he's president of the United States as being Superman. You know, there's a lot of cool stuff there. But if they want to go the route of just making him Clark Kent, a black Clark Kent, I mean, I don't care. Do that too.
It makes me sad that this is an issue.
It does too. It makes me sad that we actually care about whether, you know, somebody who plays a character is, you know, white or black. Let them, unless the character is derived from their culture of what they are, anybody can do it.
Yeah, but Superman's an alien, so he could literally be anything.
Exactly.
It's like, I don't know. But you know what's cooler than Superman?
Nobody, nothing, but
welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenner Cregan. That right there is the laughing Mr. Horsley. And today on the show, well, it's David Wohl, isn't it?
It is, man. And you chatted with him, and
because
you like to talk to people sometimes. And David's a cool guy, man. He's co-creator of Witchblade. Did he mm-hmm. also did he also co-create Darkness?
Yep, he was on the team with Darkness. I can't.
Nice.
I'll be honest. I don't remember if he was a part of the team on Darkness. You know, there was a lot going on over there at Top Cow.
Oh yeah,
and. Yeah, David was an integral part of that whole thing. It's kind of crazy that the legacy that company left.
Yeah.
I thought they were owned by Wizard forever. He goes, that happened a lot. He told me, you know, that's one of the things we talked about because that happened a lot because they had so many one-offs with Wizard.
Yeah. Yeah, so many the Wizard one-halves, yeah.
Yeah. I honestly thought they were, you know. Were you the Darkness fan and Witchblade fan?
I liked Darkness. I liked Witchblade. I watched the TV show a little bit of Witchblade when it came out. I wasn't watching a lot of TV when it came out, but I watched a little bit of it on reruns. I always liked the characters, but I never dove into them full bore. I did like the Darkness video game that came out. That was a badass game.
Oh, dude. Yeah, I played that a lot.
that game was awesome.
Yeah, that was an awesome game. That was a lot of fun. Yeah. It's kind of funny because I really liked the Darkness when it came out. I was much more of a Darkness fan than a Witchblade fan.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I remember when Jeff booked David and I was reading up on him and, you know, going through and going, oh, my God, Darkness and Witchblade and everything and how cool they were. And I remember thinking to myself when I was thinking, I said, man, these probably weren't books that Johnny really liked. Not because he didn't like them as, you know, like it wasn't your realm of what you were reading. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. I was aware of them. I did read them a little bit, but I never dove into them because it wasn't my – I was more into superhero books at the time. I was more into Batman Superman at the time, you know?
Yeah. That was like when – I think Fathom had came out around then.
Yep. Yep.
And those were good. And then Michael Turner came out of Top Cow.
Yep, yep. And the Top Cow also was the company that published J. Michael Straczynski's Rising Stars and Midnight Nation as well, which are two great books.
Yep.
But David's over at Valiant now, senior editor over at Valiant.
And one of the senior editors of Valiant of the there's like four or three, him and Heather Antos, and I think they called them the two Heathers.
Nice.
And they kind of do the editing by committee. He does certain books. They do certain books. And yeah, I'm excited because the Valiant product line, is unique.
Yeah.
And it's a shared universe. And it's kind of cool because Image doesn't do a shared universe. They could if they wanted to, but they don't.
Well, it's all Image does our creator own stuff.
Exactly. You know, exactly. Like Todd McFarlane has a pretty big universe in Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Even though he doesn't really do tons of different books, though, right?
Not anymore. No, now it's just pretty much Spawn. But there was, for a while, there was Curse of Spawn, Medieval Spawn, a bunch of different Spawn titles.
But they're all around Spawn. They weren't, you know, wasn't a shared universe like DC.
Right, right.
But Valiant does have that with Harbinger and Exo Manowar and
Ninja K or Ninjak.
Yeah, Ninjak and Rai.
It's Ninja K now. They changed it. So, like, I don't know if you know this, but in the new universe, so it was Ninjak in the, you know, the old 90s Valiants.
Yeah.
But now it's Ninja K, like Ninja-K, where he's like, it's like version K of Ninja.
I'll always just say Ninjak.
Yeah, me too.
It's like
too.
Bubba
Bloodshot
Fett.
Too. Right? Not Boba?
Dude, everybody, it's Boba Fett. I'm like, I'm sorry. I watched Star Wars when I was four, and I couldn't say Boba Fett. It came out Bubba Fett. And so I always said Bubba Fett, and it'll be Bubba Fett to the day I die.
Exactly.
Come at me, bro. Come at me.
Right? Oh, man.
Just because you were old when you saw Star Wars for the first time, get out of here.
You old man.
Well, that's enough ranting. Should we just get into this or what?
Let's do it, man.
All right. Here's David Wolf. His own work. All right, guys, welcome back. And today on the show, super exciting because, well, he started over at he's been at Marvel. He was an integral part of Top Cow. Brought some very iconic characters in the 90s of The Darkness and Witchblade. And now you find yourself being a senior editor over there at Valiant, which is an amazing company. David Wall, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, man. You, I'm 46. So my comic book reading career is about the same as your coming on board. How is everything going, man? You've had an amazing run.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you know, it's been really fun. I feel lucky because, you know, I don't know if you're asking me for my history, but like, I didn't really know what I was going to do with my life.
Yeah.
And then I ended up becoming a high school intern at Marvel. So it seemed like fate had it for me to work in comics for most of my life.
That's amazing, though.
And I wasn't actually a comic fan when I was a kid. I mean, I liked a little bit of stuff, but... But so I just kind of found myself there and I kind of never looked back, you know, it's been a great experience.
How did you get an internship at Marvel while you're still in high school? Did you just applied?
Oh, well, I grew up in New York, and the high school that I went to, a school called Hunter College High School, that also had some other big comic people, like Kyle Baker went there like a year before me. And so our school, like by the time you're a senior, hope I'm not boring, but by the time you're a senior, you kind of finished all your requirements. So they kind of force you to get out into the world and do something, you know, real. So at that point in my life, there's kind of two things that to me are funny. I was an assistant manager at Baskin Robbins, like when I was like 16. And so the first thing I wanted to do, I tried to get them to let me work at Baskin Robbins for my ICY project.
Right.
Because I'm like, yeah, I'll learn, you know, business. And they said no. Luckily, they said no. And then I thought I wanted to be like an entertainment lawyer. I'm not sure why. I think when I was 16, I dreamed of being an entertainment lawyer for Madonna. So I wanted to take jobs that were kind of related to that. And they offered me three opportunities. One of them was the Village Voice, which was like a free New York paper. And then there was this other free paper in New York that I don't remember the name of, but it was something comparable to the Village Voice, but smaller. And the third one was Marvel. And I had friends of mine, actually I had a friend named Mark Siri who got me interested in comics in the first place. And he and some other friends, Michael, he like went there. So I kind of just followed them. Like it seemed like it would be fun and we could just hang out there. And then the internship there was basically just like making copies, you know. Back then we had actual letters, you know, like snail mail. So we'd have to sort letters into letter columns. Back then it was mostly just letters to the X-Men. It was letters to Chris Claremont, you know, and they were great. I mean, one of the coolest things back then was like, you know, them all coming up because everyone was basically living in New York back then pretty much. So like they'd always be in the office and like hanging out, you know, meeting with the editors.
That's cool.
And a lot of them would come over, like Chris especially would come over to where we were and like read the letters, you know, to his comics and stuff. It was so cool. I remember meeting Walt Simonson there and, you know, just like all the Bill Sienkiewicz, like all the great people, you know, would all come there and it was just a fun place to meet people. And then apparently I was liked well enough that they kind of kept me on. I became an assistant editor. I worked on like Transformers and stuff. And then I went away to school.
So cool.
For a year, I went to SUNY Albany. Like I was going to college in New York and then decided I wanted to try going away. So I went away and came back.
Yeah.
And then basically I would just keep going away and coming back. Mark Gruenwald hired me to work to be an editorial assistant on Marvel Universe. And that was really the first major project that I worked on. And we would like stay up all night working on it. We did like everything for it. I learned like how to do production and things. And then I moved away again because I wanted to see what living in California was like. So I moved out to California. And then I came back for a third time to Marvel. Bob Budiansky hired me to work on in special projects. So I worked on like the Jim Lee X-Men trading cards.
Yeah.
And another set of X-Men trading cards where I got to meet Mark Silvestri. And then also we would drive to conventions and like do all these different things. It was just so much fun. Like I loved working there so much, you know?
Yeah.
And that third stint there, I became like an associate editor. So I got to work on more eclectic stuff. For some reason, I got a really eclectic line of books. I worked on G.I. Joe. Hellraiser.
Nice.
Like it was Hellraiser right at the end of Hellraiser at Marvel. And then like these heavy hitter epic books that we were doing. So I worked on a lot of fun stuff. I got to meet Clive Barker and got to know him, you know, because I worked on Hellraiser and that was nice. Really cool. And then, you know, that year Mark Silvestri basically offered me a job to go work for him at Top Cow.
Yeah.
Because another guy, Mike Heisler, was a letterer for him and he used to work at Marvel with me. We used to play softball together.
Was that in 93?
So he recommended Yes, and he recommended me to Mark. So for the third time, I left Marvel and went to work at Top Cow and then stayed there for like 11 years.
Well, Top Cow was, I don't know, for people who don't know, because it's been a long time, right? But Top Cow was a really important company because, man, they were kind of like the counterculture to your DCs and your Marvel. I don't know how else to put it. Even compared to Image, they were more of a counterculture than that.
Well, I mean, I think Image as a whole, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like when I first started at Top Cow, we were part of Jim, like we shared a studio with Jim Lee, Homage Studios in San Diego. And we were like small. It was like Mark and I and Mark's fiance, Cynthia, and like an assistant, Robin. And that was like the four of us.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the, like Mark and Jim worked with the same people, you know, Scott Williams and Joe Chido were like, you know, the inker and colorists for both. Like, and it was such a like, great talent. And then Jim, you know, was pioneering this whole new coloring way of working, you know, like, cause we were working with like Ollie Optics, Steve Olaf's coloring company. And then Jim was really pioneering the, you know, doing the work right there in Photoshop. you know, and like making it like when we did it at Marvel, like just a couple of years earlier, or even that same year, like our guys would do like these color guides, you know, and then we'd send it to this company that would make these color separations and like all these different things. And we were sort of bypassing all that, you know, and like just like kind of setting a whole new trend of coloring and a whole more like, I think that's really one of the main things that set Image apart, you know, because if you think that Image was basically, they were all working at Marvel, you know, right prior to that. And then they started Image, but the coloring was just so much more complex than anything Marvel was doing. And I think that's what really set it apart, you know.
Well, you get
like the paper, the books, the quality was better and the color was better.
You guys worked really closely with Wizard as well, right?
Yes. Yeah, like we would visit. Actually, that's funny, you know, because Fred Pierce is my boss now, and he was, you know, at Wizard, you know, the head of Wizard basically too. He ran it, so that's really where we got to know him. Yeah, like we were always like, you know, trying to lobby for different things at Wizard and trying to get coverage. And
when Top Cow came out, the way you guys marketed it almost felt like Wizard owned you guys. Like that was a subset of Wizard, and you guys were putting books out under the Top Cow name, but was...
Well, yeah, Wizard did that first issue of Witchblade. They had that special Wizard Ace edition that still, I think, is the most, like, valuable Witchblade comic that exists.
I think I have it.
And it was a great cover. One of my favorite covers to sign. That acetate cover that they put on it was so cool.
Well, let's actually go into that a little bit, because if I don't ask you about Witchblade in the Darkness, people are going to string me up. Where did those come from? They're wildly still popular, man. And the art, like you said, the coloring, the lettering, the story, it all came together so well. What is it like when you think back about that, those characters and how well they were received?
Oh my God. It's so, you know, I never knew what to expect, you know, like when I first started at Top Cow, you know, like I said, we were really small, right?
Yeah.
And we had one book, Cyberforce. And so, like, I had a lot of time on my hands, and because, you know, we weren't even doing a monthly book, really. So Mark, you know, had a ton of amazing ideas, and we would just kind of sit, like, by his pool, you know, and like, just come up with ideas.
Yeah.
Like, he would, and I remember the Darkness, the idea for the Darkness came before the Witchblade, and it came from Mark, you know, and so we were just, like, just spitball these ideas, you know, and develop them. The Darkness is really interesting to me because the idea that he and I like came up with first was totally different than what ended up coming out. I mean, the like a guy who could only like create these incredible things in the dark was the idea that we had. But my version was like a lot more Tim Burton-y, you know. Right. I'm not sure what Tim Burton movie was back around then. I don't know, Edward Scissorhands. Sure. But it was some like dark gothic thing of this guy who's basically immortal and creates these things because he can't like befriend anybody. And then Garth Ennis was doing Preacher, and actually I think it was Brandon Peterson in our studio who recommended Garth for it. Like, so basically that idea was percolating. Like I was in San Diego for like a year, and then we moved up to Santa Monica. And so that idea was just sort of percolating. We tried to figure out what to do with it. And then we asked Garth to do it, and he said yes. And it was really cool. And then he basically developed it into this totally different story, you know, like the story that everyone knows is Darkness, like Jackie Estacado, mafia guy, you know, playboy, whatever.
Oh.
And, you know, I think it says something about like our egos, you know, because we were like, wow, this is amazing. You know, it's great. Let's do it. Like, he breathed a life into it that we never could have expected.
Right.
And it was just so cool, you know, to like, I feel like, you know, we gave him something that he was able to mold into something even cooler.
Yeah.
And that to me is like the greatness of a development process, you know, that you could just kind of come up with ideas and then someone could kind of mold them into something that's really resident.
Yeah, dude, it sounds like he was your Ditko to your Stan Lee.
Yes, for that particular...
With like Spider-Man.
No, what you're saying, but I'm trying to think of who the he was, like Mark, you mean? Or Garth Ennis. Yes, in that particular case, Garth Ennis was. Yeah, he totally breathed it to life. And then with the Witchblade, Mark basically wanted us, I think... He wanted us to come up with a woman lead book, and it was Brian Haberlin. Now, rewinding a little bit again, like we hired Brian Haberlin probably really quickly after I started, maybe like a month into it, and he came to our San Diego office, and he kind of became our our guru of computer coloring, you know, and like just like anything to do with that technology, like he was like the king of.
Yeah.
And so our whole coloring department that became our Top Cow coloring department, and all the guys that Brian hired that became like really big guys, like Richard Isanov and Dean White,
Michael Turner.
And well, yeah, but that was like more Mark, but I'm saying on the strictly on the coloring side, like he basically created this incredible coloring department.
That's awesome.
And he's also a very creative guy. Like to this day, you know, he's doing all his books with Shadowline that are coming out and they're great. But so Brian and I basically started to come up with this idea for Witchblade, like Eternal. We both like Michael Moorcock, Elric stuff.
Yeah.
And we like the idea of the Stormbringer sentient weapon idea and an Eternal Champion idea.
Yeah.
So we kind of took that very basic concept and kind of thought, you know, what could a modern day version of that be? You know, and then like the Sarah Pazzini character came out of it. And then Michael Turner was kind of, he's another guy who started in our studio pretty quickly after I started, maybe a year later. And we saw samples. Mark always talks about how like, he didn't like his samples. Like he didn't think he did really good work, but I had faith in him.
Right.
And he basically became Mark's background guy because he could draw really good backgrounds because he had this photographic memory.
Oh, that's amazing.
And Mike was just so talented and so competitive. He just wanted to be the best at everything. And he just quickly like got better and better over such a really short amount of time.
Yeah.
That when we finally had Witchblade in a position where we could make it a comic book, he was like the natural artist for it because
awesome.
he was just getting so much better so fast. And he was drawing really fast. Like he was doing this ballistic miniseries like prior to that. And then like, I think the same month he had to do Witchblade number one and that it was craziness. But he just took on everything. And, you know, he came in and with him and Joe Benitez and Mark, they created a lot of the look, you know, for the Witchblade itself and for how it looked on Sarah. And Mike obviously created, you know, did all the characters and like created how they all looked. And then exciting part for me that wasn't exciting for me at the time, but became exciting later was seeing how Michael just took off, you know, in popularity.
Yeah.
Like I admit I was probably envious at the beginning because,
turned out to
like my work. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, and I like when he didn't draw something exactly the way I thought it should be drawn, I was pissed off.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was really young writer then and I'd never really had anything that, you know, like resonated like that with people. But, you know, but then just like being around him, he's just a really special person, you know,
that's cool.
and it was hard to be pissed off at him.
I can understand what you're saying though, because I'm that way. If I do anything creatively and I have something and I give it to somebody and I say, I need this and I want this kind of look and it's not what's in my head, it's hard not to get a little angsty about it.
Well, right. Well, and the two things I have to say about that is number one, he was 99% of the time right about the adjustments that he made.
Yeah.
And number two, if there was something like really specific that I wanted reference wise, like what a New York City police station should look like.
Yeah.
You know, when the books came out, absolutely nobody cared about what I cared about.
Right.
Right. So like I learned really quickly that, you know, like I'm obsessed with something, you know. But if no one cares about it, then I don't need to care about it.
That's interesting.
like I'm basically fighting for something that only I believe.
Yeah.
You know, so then it just became like this like really cool process of us all working together. And then Christina Z came in and we were all working on the stories together. It was just very fun. It was like it was one of those things that's kind of like, you know, probably won't happen again.
Yeah.
For me. Just like the way that happened was just really cool.
It was all organic.
And it was fun to experience it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It sounded like it was very organic.
I was such a pain in the ass though, you know. I'm like I was like the editor in chief and I was writing the book and, you know, like I was always late. I was always like doing something else. And like I would, you know, I would like yell at people and like I look back at those times. I mean not too much. I don't think people would say that, you know, that I was terrible.
Right.
But like, you know, like it's one of those things that I could look back and think, wow, I really could have handled that a lot of things differently back then.
Well I get you, man. I feel the same way. I've managed people for the last 20 years. And I remember when I was like 24, man, I'm sure I was not the easiest person to get along with. And I think it's because you're trying so hard not to mess up, you know,
yeah.
and to prove yourself because and when you're young, you know, you don't want to make the mistakes, even though that's how you learn. You know, you can say you get that, but you don't ever really get it until that light bulb turns on. You're like, oh, you know what? I totally know what to do here because I tried this before and this is what happened.
Yeah. I mean, I did learn a lot, like moving forward into other projects that I worked on.
You know,
and it was just a really fun time, you know, going to conventions, like all, awesome. You know, everywhere. And
yeah.
Having huge lines. I remember that. That's when I realized that we were really popular because, like, it was one of the early issues. Mike and I were invited to do this, like, store signing in Tampa. And mostly I remember that we went to Busch Gardens and they had this roller coaster that went over alligators. And I thought that was really cool. But there was this line, like, out the door of this place where we were, you know, like, down the block and, like, around the corner.
That's cool.
And, you know, and it didn't bother me that it was, like, you know, 95% for him. Because by then I was cool with it, you know.
Yeah.
I just really enjoyed seeing someone else's popularity, you know, and we all did.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good. It's kind of funny that you brought up editor-in-chief and everything, because at that time, Valiant was going on and was killing it. They had Exo Manowar, yeah. Turok,
yeah, totally.
Magnus Robot Fighter. When back in the 90s, were you looking at Valiant going, wow, I want to get to that level? Or were you just so focused on Witchblade, so focused on the darkness that what they were doing is a little bit different than what you were doing?
I think we were always really impressed with them. I mean,
yeah.
You know, when I was at Marvel, Jim Shooter was the editor in chief when I was there. You know, I mean, we didn't really connect too much because I was either an intern or like an assistant editor or something.
Right.
But seeing that he went to Valiant and Bob Layton, who I used to work with on Iron Man, you know, went over there and I really like him. And they just put together like an amazing group of people, you know, and did some amazing books. We actually, the first year I was there, we worked on this Deathmate crossover with them and did this like bus tour with them, which was fun. So yeah, I mean,
cool.
I knew a lot of those guys too. And yeah, I mean, seeing what they were doing was really impressive.
So,
actually, you know, it's funny. Like now I go back and once I started at Valiant, you know, I went back and read a huge amount of stuff. And looking back at that, it's just, yeah, it holds up a lot of it. Like, it's really cool.
That's cool. So now you're a senior editor at Valiant.
Yeah.
You started over the summer. How's it going? Is there anything you can tell us about what's coming out? And,
it's going really well. You know, Valiant is a whole different environment to where I've worked before, but like in a positive way. Like Valiant, like, I don't know. I remember, I'm going to go back, but I'll come back to what your question is.
Great. Everything you're going through is awesome. So please, any insights you want to give, I love it.
Well, I just remember like at some point when CrossGen was really popular, we used to go to conventions and everyone from CrossGen would sort of sit together on the bus with their CrossGen t-shirts, like the bus that would go, the shuttle that would go like from the hotel to the airport. And I thought about like teams, you know, like being a team player and stuff. And they were like really a team. Like they were so a team that I didn't think I could ever be with a company that was that much of a team, you know, at Top Cow, you know, we were sort of a team, but we were definitely like our own people too.
Right.
Now the thing about Valiant is like, they're like, we're really a team, you know, like when we come up with new stories, we run them by each other. You know, like whenever you get a cover done, there's like a whole committee of people who look at it and give their notes and everyone gives their input, you know, whether it's the editorial side or sales and marketing or, you know, whoever it is. And I think it's a really cool way to run a business, you know. I think that Fred Pierce from Wizard has a lot to do with that, you know, like just that mentality, like everyone really enjoys what they're doing. And they just enjoy the creation of comic books. And it shows in the books that are coming out. I mean, this is a really cool time because, you know, because of last year, you know, I came into it in the middle of, you know, the COVID-19 stuff.
Yeah.
And they had to cut back on, we had to cut back on our production a lot. And now we're finally getting to see a lot of the launches that we were planning to do way back, you know, early last year or some point last year. So the first one is Savage, which is coming out right now, which is a really cool book. I don't know if people are familiar with it, but it's a good story. And then Shadow Man is coming in April, which is really cool. And then like I get to work on a totally new property that I can't even talk about, but I'm very excited about it. And I think people are going to be really happy with it.
Everybody comes on, they always tell me that. Oh, I can't talk about this, but it's really cool.
I can't talk about it, but it sucks.
Well, tell us about.
I know. Just kidding, anybody.
Tell us about Savage, because it's B. Claymore and Clayton Henry and Louis LaRosa, and it looks fun. It looks awesome.
That was the original one.
That's the original one. Oh, so this is a man.
The new one is Nathan Stockman.
Okay, cool.
Are you going to get me down with the credits? Might have to edit this part. Hang on.
That's what we do, man. that's so funny.
It's basically a guy who we have this thing in Valiant called the Faraway, which is sort of like this place where all these different times and dimensions meet and craziness happens. And in the original Savage, this soccer player Sauvage ends up getting stuck in this place, you know, and their kid is born there. And the story is really about him like growing up there and then like fighting his way out of the Faraway and making it back to England. So this Savage, basically the last story, the first Savage series, ends with him waking up appearing like in Piccadilly Circus.
Yeah.
Like he's just this boy, you know, who just appears in Piccadilly Circus. And that's basically the end of the first one. So now the story follows him, you know, like what's his life like now? Oh, it's Max Bemis and Nathan Stockman.
Sorry. Yeah, I was just going to say about it.
And so it follows him now, you know, like he's this like social media darling who is really bored because all he wants to do is go back and fight dinosaurs, you know, in the Faraway. And so it's basically his story. And then the creatures from the Faraway end up coming to London and he's got to fight them. But it's like a really, really fun story. It's like a fun offbeat story.
Yeah.
And it's a good read.
When you're the senior editor, do you overlook all the books that are coming out for Valiant right now? Or do you have a set that you're responsible for?
I have a set, like all three of us are the same level. So that's Lisa Hawkins and Heather Antos. You know, all three of us like work on different stuff.
Yeah, we had Heather on not too long ago. She was great.
Yeah. She's a really good interview. That's the thing. Like I'm not over them and they're not over me, but we all look at each other and give notes.
You're right. You're peers.
So that's really what I think what sets us apart is that, you know, like, yeah. So like, you know, we'll all read the stuff and be like, yeah, you know, maybe this could change or whatever. And it's just, it's a fun process, but it's interesting just because like, I'm sort of more like working on newer projects.
Yeah.
So right now it's more like Heather and Lisa are handling like all the books except one, the one book that I have that's going to come out.
Nice.
The one you can't talk about in the future. Yes. The one that I'm forbidden to talk about, but I still read everything and comment on it. You know,
watch it comes out. It's called Forbidden to Talk About.
I'll come back when I can talk about it.
You should. Cause that would be a lot of fun because Valiant's, I don't know. Their books are so much fun. And I remember going back when, back in the day, the level of, how am I saying this? The quality of the publishing of the books was so much more than everybody else at that time. You know, they really put in, like, I have Valiant books from 91 that still look brand new. You know, and I read them and I, you know, and I put them just in normal cellophane I didn't, you know, do anything special with them, you know, like I did with other ones that I own, you know, and you pull it out like my Turok number one still looks like the day I pulled it off the shelf, you know?
That's amazing. Yeah. Cause usually like things fall apart.
Yeah. It's really cool. And it's, but the storylines that they have and the characters that developed and having that whole universe, it was such a great alternative than being stuck with DC or Marvel. Not that you're stuck with DC or Marvel, but having that third option that was a shared universe that was so much fun. And I was so glad to see them come, for lack of a better term, come back here a few years ago. And it was like, oh.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and then the movie with
Bloodshot.
Yeah, Bloodshot. But what, I can't remember the actor's name all of a sudden. Oh, Drew Blank. Vin Diesel. Huh? Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel.
Ugh, thank you. Jeez, man. That was okay. Awesome.
Oh, cool. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. It was a lot of, I mean, I thought it was a lot of fun. Are you guys going to do another one? Do you know?
Well, there's talk about it. Vin, I think, posted something like, I know he wants to do another one, or at least I believe he wants to do another one. And we also have Harbinger that's in the works.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
Which is a really good comic. And I've gotten to see, you know, like the development of that. And it's just really cool. I think it's going to be a good movie.
When you look at the characters like Exo Man of War, you know, how much care do you have to sit there and put in, not only from the history of it coming back from the 90s, because now it's been 30 years. It's not, you know, Valiant's not the new kid on the block anymore. It's 30 years of fans building up this following to when you guys come back and you're reintroducing, for lack of a better term, Exo Man of War. What thought process do you think you have as you're doing this with some of these characters?
Well, I mean, I really think it's a fine line, you know. I mean, obviously, like, I worked at DC for a little while, so I got to experience the other side of that, you know, which is, you know, very much into continuity.
Right.
Like, because I think that, you know, or even when I worked on Witchblade, you know, like, there's fans who are really into the mythology and the lore and the continuity, you know.
Right.
And I feel like, when I'm developing a story, you know, I really want to respect the fans of the book from, you know, from previous incarnations, you know, like I want to always like tell a story that's new, obviously, but at the same time, you want to make sure that they know that we know like where the character's been.
Right.
You know, so I feel like that's important. You know, I think that when you just kind of trash like old continuity and like kind of ignore it, you know, then it suffers a little bit. But at the same time, you don't want to be totally beholden to that old continuity, because then the story will never move forward.
Right.
I think that Heather, as an editor, did a really good job with that, with the new Exo Manowar that came out.
Yeah.
You know, because like they really wanted to go in a different direction than what people had seen before, yet still, you know, acknowledge, you know, what are the things that make Exo a special character. So I feel like you really need to put that care in. You know, when a character has a history, and you know that there are fans out there who really appreciate that history, you don't want to mess with that.
And having somebody like Heather on board, she has her finger on the pulse, I think, more than a lot of people do, especially with her age group.
Totally.
You know, and everything else that goes with that. Because and you need that to attract. You need. It's nice having the old readers. That's always you know you want to have your people, but you got to. It's comic books, man. You got to keep bringing in those new people.
Yes, and I think Heather and Lisa both like are really cool, you know, finding like really good creators, you know, to like the, I'm not sure if I could talk about what Lisa's doing too much. I don't know, did we? I don't know what I could say, but they're both really good at finding like really good creators who could bring a whole new spin on a character that already exists, and also like are coming with their fans, you know, who like follow them, you know? So it's a cool mix.
Yeah.
Because,
nice.
You know, we always want new readers. We always want new people to pick up the books and be like, wow, that character's pretty cool. You know, I'll keep following it.
Do you go back to somebody like a Kevin Van Hook or a Don, you know, with Bloodshot and you're bringing this character into the new, you know, into today's realm. But do you go back to the old creators and say, how do you guys feel about this? And, Do you have any suggestions, things like that?
I have done that. Yeah, I mean, when I first got there, and that was more general stuff. It wasn't for any specific ideas. But I mean, I talked to Joshua Dysart, you know, and who wasn't part of the original launch, but he was part of the relaunch in 2014. He wrote the Harbinger story, and I talked to Bob Layton, and I talked to Kevin Van Hook a little bit, but only like on Facebook. I think we just comment things to each other once in a while. But yeah, I mean, like if I was involved in another one of those characters, I would definitely reach out to them and find out, you know, like what their thinking was, you know, what made them special.
Yeah. Well, this is exciting. This is really exciting, man. Do you have anything that you're going to be working on yourself? You have any stories in the pipeline that you're thinking of?
I'm starting to. Obviously, nothing that I could talk about yet.
You're right. Of course.
But, you know, like I kind of miss writing. I mean, you know, after Top Cow, I did books with Aspen, you know, executive assistant Iris. And I did this other book, Santa Rhea.
And you worked on the Witchblade TV series too, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. While I was still a Top Cow.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were producers on it. Yeah. That was fun. We gave notes and we go to meetings and went up to Toronto to watch them film.
That's cool. I got so excited when I watched the movie Kick-Ass and she's the mom.
Yeah.
you know, the mob wife. And I was like, oh my God, it's Witchblade.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, I remember we met her at the shooting. We also met her in San Diego, Yancy Butler. Yeah, she was really fun to hang out with.
Yeah, was she nice?
And those guys, yeah, she was really nice. I mean, they were all so respectful.
Oh, that's cool.
Eric Adebari, the guy who played Nottingham, was totally like into the character and would like run things by us, like what he wanted to do. Anthony Sestaro was the guy who played Irons, and he was a great guy. We used to go to lunch together, and I watched him perform in a play in Orange County, like years later.
Yeah.
They're really, really good people.
That's cool, man. Well, David, when you're able to talk about some of the other stuff, please come on. I love talking with you. I think we could talk for hours and not be a problem.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I definitely will. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm not even kidding, man.
I'm sorry that there's stuff I can't really talk about.
No, that's okay.
I don't like doing that either.
That's the nature of the beast, man. That means you guys are working. That means you guys have things planned out. I love that. Are you kidding? Just the fact that Valiant is going strong.
I have stuff that I can't talk about.
Yeah. The fact that Valiant is going strong, has a plan in action, I'm super excited. And the moves that they've been making by hiring Elisa, hiring a Heather, hiring you, and it's showing that they're ready for more growth. I'm super excited. And if there's a Harbinger movie that could possibly occur, I'm going to be one of the first people in line. So this is awesome.
Cool. Me too.
Yeah. So,
thank you.
Please, are you guys going to be doing the cons when they come back? Is that going to be something you're going to be doing, or are you going to send your minions out?
I hope so. Yeah, I imagine I will.
Oh, nice. Well, because we have a really good one here in Seattle for the Emerald City Comic Con.
Oh, I love the Emerald City Comic Con. I've been there.
Yeah, well, we should get together when you get here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about moving there for a little while.
Oh, were you? Nice. Yeah. Did you decide against it? It's expensive here.
Well, no, it was a job thing a couple years ago.
Yeah.
It ended up not happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is a nice place to raise kids.
I actually want to move to Squim, Washington.
Oh, you know, it's on the books. It's illegal to rain there. Cause they're,
I don't know.
They're in what's called a rain shadow. They're in what's called a rain shadow. The mountain, they're so close to the mountain that the mountain act literally blocks like 90% of the normal rainfall that the rest of the state gets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it doesn't rain as often. It rains there. Don't get me wrong. It does rain in Squim, but not a lot.
Yeah, now I want to live there more.
Yeah. Squim's out in the middle of kind of nowhere, man. It's out there. But
yeah, I know someone who lives there. So I went up and visited him when I was the last time I was there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it definitely was out in the middle of nowhere.
Great crabbing.
Cool.
Sorry. I thought I turned my phone off and apparently not. Oh, geez. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Well, we came to the end anyways.
Okay. Well, it was great talking to you.
Awesome talking to you, David. I really appreciate you coming on. I really hope you come back. Seriously, anytime.
Me too.
And if maybe you can come back on and we can just shoot the breeze with all the stuff that you've been doing up to this point, because your stuff on Witchblade and what you did at Top Cow, I just feel like that was such a bottle, lightning in the bottle. And
you know, we used that very expression when we were there.
Yeah. And it was just, I don't think people understand how overnight big it was, you know, and the fact that it was just, and people still, I mean, those comics are still super loved today, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just
always cool.
Yeah. And I'd love to dial in and maybe actually, you know, here's something that we do and maybe I can get you to come on board and do this. We do what's called a DVD, a comic book commentary track. And we both take a comic, we take one of your comics that you wrote, and then we read through it. And then we go page by page, you give us the backlog of what you were going through, what you were doing as these came about.
Wow, that sounds scary.
It's fun. Yeah. It's fun. We did it with the Canto. Have you read Canto?
No.
Oh, okay. So Canto's out of IDW. And those guys, it's a fun book. It's kind of like an adult, not adult. It's a fantasy kind of like on the vein of Wizard of Oz.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's cool. And then we did one with independent guy, Stefan Frank. He was the animation supervisor for the Iron Giant and a bunch of other stuff. And he has a book called Silver. It's amazing. He came on, we did a commentary track on that. And then Frank Gogol, who did Dead End Kids, he came on and he did his. It's a lot of fun. If cool. you thought you'd be it. Interested, it'd be cool.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
It sounds scary, but it sounds fun also.
It's not scary. It's actually ends up being pretty cool, and we can do different things. So,
well, as long as I get to make fun of my own writing, then it would be, be all right.
Yeah, that would be even better, because then I can make fun of you. And you can make fun of me. All right, David. Well, you have an amazing night, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, you too.
And we're back.
That's right. We are back. Back in the saddle again. Well, I hope you guys really, really enjoyed that as much as we did making it for you. And if you like what you heard and you want to hear more, you got to go check out spoilerverse.com, because at spoilerverse.com, we have a plethora. Plethora is such a snobbish word.
I like it, though. It's a good word.
We have an obscene amount of interviews obscene. With amazing directors and artists of all walks of life and editors and writers. And oh my God, are you a lover of comic books like we are? And then there's
so many
amazing people from the comic book world over at spoilerverse.com. And I highly implore you to go there and check it out.
Yeah, and while you're there, you can check out all the other podcasts on our network, like Bridges and Geekdoms and Funny Book Forensics and Haphazard Adventures and Nerds from the Crypt and so many more.
Misery Point Radio.
Episodes all the time. Misery Point Radio has got a ton of great stuff out there. Go check all of them out. And check out all of the reviews and previews and articles we have going up every single day for you, every day on Spoilerverse.com for you to check out, to read, and to love, and to like, and to comment. We have a store link. If you want to help support the site, you can do it two ways. One, go to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/spoilercountry, or go to our store link in the middle of the site there and get a t-shirt, a face mask, a hoodie, something. Look fly as hell and help support the site when you do that, because we get a dollar or two. And, you know, maybe you want to talk to us. If you do, you can do it, you know, obviously on all the socials, but if you go to scpod.us/discord, you can join our public Discord server and come chat with us all day long.
I couldn't say it better myself, dude.
There you go.
You just mouthed out a ton of information at once. And really, I hope you guys enjoy what you're hearing, because we're working our butts off to bring it to you.
We are.
I guess there's only one left thing. One left thing?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with it. There's only one left thing left to do.
What's that?
In an oceans of podcasts, we are Cthulhu. As Cthulhu compels you to do, open the mind.
And...